I will talk about things which were unexpected to me. He's going to be unexpected for me. Out of many unexpected things which I met when I learned about the relativistic model and when I worked on them, I selected three. Two of them are small subjects. One is surprise to the density functional. Another one, unexpected similarities of relativistic and non-relativistic descriptions. And the third one is a bit longer. It's about the actual equation and introduction. I am aware that most of the audience is not very deeply familiar with relativistic mechanics, so let me say a few words about basic formulation. So, basic equation is written here, it's a Dirac equation. It's written in a in which you cannot see very easily that it's also eigenvalue problem of Hamiltonian, but it is. Here is energy. And these blocks here are 2x2 matrices. This is momentum operator, sigma, Pauli matrix, speed Pauli matrix. This is external potential. As I said, this is energy, mass of the particle, velocity of light. The Hamiltonian forms a 4x4 matrix. Elements of this matrix are these operators, which I named here. And therefore, the weight function has multi-component structure. It's composed of four components, and it is convenient to divide them to a pair which is called large, and another pair which is called small components. It's the easiest way to transform this equation into its non-relativistic form is to neglect this V minus E compared to 2mc squared. In non-relativistic case, we assume that this term is small. And compared to the rest energy of and if we do so, then this equation transforms to this form, which is known as the Levi-Lacoste equation.
It's very similar, except that velocity of light, which was present here, was moved to this place. And in the Hamiltonian, we have no velocity of light. Here, it doesn't exist also anymore because it's absorbed by this function which before was referred to as a small component. Now, if, let's have a look at this equation again. So what is specific here is that this element of our 4x4 matrix is just a number, it's a scalar matrix, it's 2x mass. So we can easily evaluate from the second, because these are two equations, first row multiplied by this column and second row multiplied by this column. So from the second pair of equations, we can evaluate psi s, express it in terms of psi l, it's written here, and then eliminate psi s from the first equation. In consequence, we get what is here. You can recognize here Schrödinger equation. If we didn't have sigma here, it would be the standard form of the Schrödinger equation. But sigma p squared is equal to p squared times 2x2 unit matrix. So it's really Schrödinger equation written in for a two-component wave function. One of these components corresponds to spin alpha, and the second to the spin beta. And then the spectrum. Spectrum of this Dirac Hamiltonian is fundamentally different from the spectrum of Schrödinger Hamiltonian. And this difference is based on presence of so-called negative continuum. The spectrum is not bounded from below. There is no lowest eigenvalue. Here we have discrete spectrum, here we have this upper continuum, and this part of spectrum is also present in the Schrödinger case, and their levels corresponding in Schrödinger picture, in Schrödinger model, levels corresponding to these discrete levels of Dirac equation, and Schrödinger continuum corresponding to this upper continuum of the Dirac model. But there is nothing in the Schrödinger model which corresponds to this negative continuum. Presence of this negative continuum is a source of many difficulties, especially if we want to apply to solving a Dirac equation this method which has been developed for the Schrödinger equation, which has spectrum bounded from below. In particular, when applying variational method, one has to be very careful because, as you see, the spectrum doesn't have ground state. And what usually we do, we apply algebraic approximations. That means we expand our wave function in a basis of some functions here, and then try to apply variational principle. But before that, we have this Dirac equation in algebraic approximation, and we can diagonalize the matrix. And if we do this, here it is the same picture which was before, positive continuum, negative continuum, discrete part. If we algebraize, put it into algebraic form, then this continua are described by a set of discrete levels, which I've shown here and here, and discrete levels are here. Of course, because of incompleteness of the basis set and not necessarily correct relation between small and large components, this spectrum may be very much different from this one. And there are several conditions which have to be fulfilled in order to get this algebraic spectrum, at least in this part which corresponds to the discrete levels, similar to the real one. And the most important is condition which relates large and small components. I will not go into details of that. Who knows, then will remind, and who doesn't know, well, will guess, maybe. The most important condition is condition which relates large and small components of the wave function. If we are able to fulfill relation between large and small components of the variational function exactly, then it was proved to by several people, but probably the proof by Maria Esteban and co-workers is the best known. It may be proved that what remains, this equation for the large components, has spectrum bounded from below, and we can apply variational principle safely in this case. But we have to fulfill strictly relation between large and small components. In practical terms, it's nearly never possible, except, for example, for Dirac-Fock equations, which are solved numerically, and then this is applied. These relations are fulfilled from the very beginning, and therefore in numerical Hartree-Dirac-Fock method we don't meet many of the problems which appear in algebraic equations where these relations cannot be exactly fulfilled. And condition which can be applied practically is so-called kinetic balance condition, which here is written in a slightly extended form, but what is usually done is the condition that the space of large components let's start from this side, that the space of small component wave functions, that means the space spanned by the basis in which we expand small components, is larger than sigma p multiplied by functions of the space of large components. In other words, we have to have as large space of small components as it is possible, and then we get rid out of most of the trouble. Okay, so this is introduction, and then the first surprise. Here there is a set of formulas which are very simple, but I'm not going to go through them in details. This is Rayleigh quotient for Dirac case, as you see, and then we can write down energy functional, which is consequence of condition which results from this Rayleigh of application of variational principle to this Rayleigh quotient, and in Dirac case it looks like that. In Levy-Leblanc case it looks simpler, but details are not important. What is in source of the surprise is the following thing. If we take a hydrogen atom, hydrogenic atom, with this potential, and if we introduce this potential to this energy functional which you saw on the previous transparency, and if we impose on the space of the variational functions condition which allows us to get exact solution for nodeless states of hydrogen atoms, that means for 1s 1 half, 2p 3 halves, 3d 5 halves, and so on, then some very strange thing happened. Then it appears that the energy functional for both Dirac and Levy-Leblanc equation depends on only one quantity, on this quantity here, on this quantity x. Rho is a density corresponding to this, it's defined here, it's this phi of r. The radial part of the wave function is exact, and the angular part is exact, and the radial part is subject to variational procedure. And then the radial density is given here, this quantity x is defined here, kinetic energy is given by this expression, and the potential energy, this is sum of this and this term in case of Levy-Leblanc equation. Then the energy functional of the Levy-Leblanc case for hydrogen is here. As you see, it's parabola, it has one minimum, and surprisingly this minimum, or maybe not surprisingly, but this minimum is equal to exact Schrödinger energy. And the same in the Dirac case. And it's exact energy for all nodeless solutions, so for 1s, 1 half, 2p, 3 halves, and so on. What's the consequence of that? And the consequence is, it's what makes surprise, because let's take this sort of the trial function. Here g, alpha, and d are three parameters. And we always can select alpha. This integral, which was on the previous transparency, can be easily evaluated for this function. And one can see that one can always select alpha in such a way that this functional, energy functional assumes minimum. And that means that we get exact energy both in Dirac and in the Schrödinger case for an infinite number of functions. All of them, one of them equal to the exact solutions, but then infinite number of functions which are completely different. We can impose boundary conditions, and these boundary conditions in zero and in infinity would fit the remaining parameters. But we can take more flexible trial function. Let's say we can put here a polynomial which wouldn't change behavior of the function in zero and in infinity, and then we have again an infinite set of functions which give exact energy. This doesn't contradict Hohenberg-Kohn's theorem, because Hohenberg-Kohn's theorem is valid for one component equation, for Schrödinger equation, not for Dirac equation, but it shows that one has to be very, very cautious applying variational using density functional theory in a relativistic case. And now, unexpected similarities. I'm afraid I am too slow. Unexpected similarities, I will show you just in one example. Let's again take a hydrogen atom and trial functions with exact angular part and flexible radial part, and let this radial part be just exponential function multiplied by radial variable to certain power. And if we have a minimum basis set and apply this to the case of ground state of helium and plot the energy, the expectation value, the Rayleigh quotient or value of this functional we had before as a function of nonlinear parameters, then we have this kind of picture. As you see, this is saddle point. And the left-hand side corresponds to Dirac equation. The right-hand side corresponds to Levi-Blount equation. As you see, these pictures are nearly identical. And it wouldn't be so much surprising if it was not Z equal 90 here, and if the difference in energy was not very big. It's several hard trees. So, and here, it's another picture. Here it shows something less trivial. It's similar map of dependence of nonlinear parameters in the case when the expansion contains just two functions, and this is first excited state, 2p1/2 state of hydrogen. As you see, there are very many extrema here, and the one which corresponds to exact solution is here. There are two eigenvalues, two lowest eigenvalues, maps for Dirac and for Levi-Leblanc. The exact solution corresponds to this saddle point here, here and here. But if we looked at values of energies in this extrema, let's forget about all these columns, let's take just these two. This is the case when we have expansion to two-term expansion, and here are two eigenvalues of the energy matrix in the points corresponding to this extrema shown in these pictures, here, there. And the exact solution is here. And these are parameters which correspond to exact energy of 2p1/2. However, this is not the ground state, the lowest eigenvalue. A lower eigenvalue is this one, and this is so-called spurious root, which appears as poorly represented state of the positive continuum. So if we diagonalize this matrix, then the first eigenvalue doesn't correspond to the energy. However, if we had something, I don't know, something is wrong with this.
Maybe you can use this one.
Here, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If we looked at all eigenvalues in all extrema, then one can see that this one, for example, is much more appropriate as an approximation to the spectrum. Here is the ground state, which is nearly good, and here is something which is somewhere higher. These two are also more appropriate, but they are completely wrong. The wave function is completely wrong in these cases. So again, one has to be extremely careful when working with variational principle, even in such simple cases. In complicated cases, one simply doesn't see what one obtains. One obtains some numbers, the numbers look reasonable, and one tends to accept it. But the results are wrong. They don't describe any physical reality. Now, the last point, and the most interesting, according to my feeling, this is Dirac-Coulomb equation. Here is two electron Dirac-Coulomb Hamiltonian. This is Dirac-Hamiltonian for one particle, Dirac-Hamiltonian for the other, and the interaction between two electrons. And this Hamiltonian, as I wrote here, is a strange hybrid composed of relativistic one-electron part and a non-relativistic two-electron term. Its eigenvalue problem has been subject of controversy for a very long time, since it was discovered by Brown and Ravenhall that the eigenvalue problem doesn't have bound state solution. This effect, known as Brown-Ravenhall disease, and the continuum is referred to as Brown-Ravenhall continuum. And This is a note which I think is essential, that it's nothing special and nothing particularly difficult when we have discrete and continuum spectra which overlap. Problem starts when there are terms which couple continuum states with the discrete states, and then there are no discrete states at all because everything is somehow coupled with continuum. And this is the case when we have Dirac Coulomb equation. I don't know, can you hear me? Yeah? Okay. Because I forgot and keep the microphone down here. Okay. This is the case with Dirac Coulomb equation. And here we have a picture which shows difference between Dirac spectrum, Dirac one electron Dirac Hamiltonian spectrum is here, and spectrum of Dirac Coulomb Hamiltonian is here, and this picture is not very clear, therefore I will go to the one where it is better. Here you can see the spectrum. These are discrete energy levels. This is positive continuum and negative continuum, but then there are cases when one electron of these Dirac electrons is in the positive continuum and the other one on discrete state, or vice versa. Therefore, there are many continua which start from the discrete levels, and then this brown Ravenhall continuum which spreads from minus to plus infinity and corresponds to the case when one electron is in the positive continuum and the other one in the negative continuum, and the sum of this one electron energies can be arbitrary. Then we have continuum which spreads everywhere, and in this background we have discrete levels we are interested in. So it seems that practical method of solving these equations are extremely complex, and maybe simply it is impossible. Some people argue that it's impossible to solve. How much time do I have?
5 minutes.
Wow!
Not 5 minutes.
Anyway, so here are some comments on this subject, comments of different authors. Sacher, Indelicato, Johnson, he is most extreme, he is most sort of soft, but he says that Dirac energy may look perfectly normal when negative energy basis functions are also included. Nevertheless, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to identify and correct intrinsic errors in Dirac energy, and they can look very normal. You saw something similar also in one electron Dirac equation, but in case of Dirac Coulomb, it's enhanced. On the other hand, Grant and his co-workers claimed that it was no need to make any kind of projection, because I didn't say that. With this sort of spectrum, the method which was considered to be the most appropriate for solving this problem was to project out the states which are responsible for generation of this continuum. On the other hand, even if one doesn't do that, effects are big. Something similar you saw yesterday when there was spectrum non-relativistic and relativistic potential energy curves corresponding to the same case. Or, for example, here X-ray spectra with perfect agreement with experiment thick line is a result of calculation using Dirac Coulomb equation, and the points are experimental points. Well, now maybe I will skip part which I shouldn't, but I'm afraid I have no choice. And I will announce an approach which gives us new insight into structure of spectrum of Dirac Coulomb Hamiltonian. One can apply to solving this eigenvalue problem a method which is normally used to treatment of resonances, because all states of this Hamiltonian eigenstates are in fact resonances. That means they are auto-ionizing states, including ground state of helium. And this is based on rotation in the complex plane. So if we complex plane rotate Dirac spectrum, here is Dirac spectrum you already saw before, and this is after rotation. These points correspond to discrete eigenvalues, to these energy levels. And these lines here on the horizontal line is imaginary, because after we have this complex coordinate rotation transformation imposed to the Hamiltonian, then the Hamiltonian becomes non-Hermitian and complex, and eigenvalues are complex numbers. So here is imaginary axis and real axis. Oh yeah, yeah, thank you. And real axis, and the continua are transformed into these lines which go to the complex plane. In the real axis remain the eigenvalues. And if we apply this to Dirac-Coulomb equation, the picture is more complicated but still quite simple. This is case when we switch off inter-electron interaction. Then the discrete eigenvalues remain on this axis and all continua fly out to the imaginary plane. If we include interaction between electrons, then this point move, but in a very specific way, easy to distinguish, to the complex plane, but remain very near to the real axis. Here you have a picture of real spectrum obtained from algebraic calculation. You see that it is rotated. It is very similar to what you saw on the previous picture. It's an enlargement of this part near to the ground state. So you see ground state, excited states, and so on. But before rotation, you have just a family of points without any possibility to distinguish which point corresponds to what. And now, if you run Hilleras CI for Dirac-Coulomb Hamiltonian, something which absolutely shouldn't be done because fulfillment of these conditions I was talking before is next to impossible. If you run in a small basis set, here is correlation energy. Non-relativistic for helium isoelectronic series. Correlation energy, which is obtained from non-relativistic model, and then relativistic one with relatively small basis. But if the basis is large, then you get all these spikes, all these instabilities. If you complex coordinate rotate your Hamiltonian, that one remains is a smooth spectrum. Until now, nothing surprising. One could expect this. However, here comes kind of surprise, because standard approach to solving Dirac-Coulomb equation for helium-like atoms is to make projection to the positive energy space, and this crosses here and stars correspond to this positive energy projected very large CI calculation performed some 15 years ago by Johnson and co-workers. And this line here, this is Hilleras CI result, also complex coordinate rotated in large basis. And if we calculate difference between this and that, then this difference is equal to what is given here. And it's a function of Z alpha to power 3. This line, which is drawn here, is the result of non-projected Hilleras CI corrected by this quantity. That means that projected and non-projected spectra, maybe I will go to the conclusion here. Maybe let's forget it. Here's the last point. Positive energy state projected and non-projected approaches converge, and they converge, each of them converge if properly done, and converge to different limits. And the difference is equal to this quantity divided by 4 pi or something, and this quantity is equal to the first order correction to the Coulomb interaction due to production of virtual pairs. So that is something one could expect, but one expects when one gets it. Before we got it, it was, for me, another surprise. So thank you for your attention.
Now we have 1 minute for discussion. Questions? It's a difficult stuff, so Any question in the audience? From the point of view of applicability, what are the main, so the main push of silence here as far as...
Yes, well, molecular
science. You have 1 minute.
Yeah,
so
okay, I will...
Read the first two.
I will come back to...
Or,
okay, I will show you two...
Close to your door, to your mouth, please.
Okay.
Otherwise...
Here, you see, here you have one picture which shows potential energy curves calculated without Dirac-Coulomb equation here and with Dirac-Coulomb equation. So difference is very big. You saw yesterday results shown by Luis Seho when he had to use perturbative corrections, but then we had this short discussion about possibility of extension, and he admitted that it would be good if this extension was possible to perform in not too complicated way. And here is, I think, quite spectacular picture showing how good description of extremely complex situation, physical situation, one can get. Here is X-ray spectrum when you get mixture of all kinds of X-ray transitions, because you have scattering process and internal electrons from internal shells are thrown away, and we have transitions to these holes. And description of this without using fully relativistic approach with inclusion of QED corrections would give complete nonsense. And with that you have very good agreement. So for all cases where heavy systems containing heavy nuclei are involved, and specifically processes in which not only the outer electrons but also inner electrons are involved, can be treated only with inclusion of this relativistic effect. And in order to know what one gets from this calculation, one has to understand this basic structure of equation. So this is practical.
Great. Any question? Yep. So let's thank our speaker again.